Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast, Season 6, Episode 37. My name is Tim Mitchell. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jonathan Kuhlein in Mississauga, Ontario.
Hello there, kids.
We also have Jaime Lopez Jr. on the line in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
At least I think he's in Seattle, Washington. I don't really know. All right.
The most complex AI program ever invented, yeah. Jaime Lopez Jr.
Jaime Lopez Jr., yes. So quick couple of fact checks. These go back way back to like February. We were talking about my Apple Vision Pro. I mentioned Apple Vision Pro or Apple Care Plus for Apple Vision Pro should cover everything on the invoice. It does not. It only covers, I spoke to somebody at Apple. And I was trying to sort out my lens issues, which I'll tell you about in a minute. But yeah, the Apple Care Plus only covers the hardware itself, not the lenses or the carry case. So yeah, don't spill coffee on your carry case or whatever. And the Dinosaur Experience video that we talked about on the Vision Pro is actually by Jon Favreau. That's kind of cool. So it's, I guess, an ILM Disney Plus. Was it with Marvel? I don't know. That guy, you know, that guy.
Yeah, he was doing Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett and all that.
So that whole dinosaur animation thing is his work, or he was part of it. He produced it, I guess, whatever, directed it. And then the issue with my Zeiss lenses was they got stuck at the border. What happened? I couldn't upload my prescription. That's what it was, right? And turned out that when I was in Rochester getting fitted for the Apple Vision Pro, and I do recommend that if you buy a Vision Pro and you pay all that money, make sure it's 100% perfect before you walk out the door. Spent an hour trying to get fitted for a proper light lens thing, or what do you call it, light shield, and they had to change my order by canceling the order I had and then putting the order back in again with the corrected light shield, but that broke the association between my lens order and the order. So I spoke to a nice gentleman at Apple who suggested I reorder or just order the lenses by themselves, and then he canceled the lenses as the follow-up on the first order. And then, to add insult to injury, the Zeiss lens just got held up at the border for like a week while they tried to figure out what, in fact, they were. So, yeah, set in customs for a week. But now that I have them, it's all good, and everything's nice and crisp and clean and clear and stuff. So that's the follow-up on the fact check. So let's jump over to the headlines with Jonathan.
Yeah, I thought I'd jump us in with some of the Trek news. Obviously, we've been off for a little bit, so I thought I'd catch us up on a few things. Some stuff's come out this week, and a few other things that we can chat about. So there was a great piece in Variety, Variety.com this week, outlining with the final season of Discovery about to start or just having started, sort of where Trek is and where it's going. Obviously, it's one of the most long-running franchises in film and television history now. And so there's this huge piece on Variety basically talking to a lot of the people who are working on the current shows about where they're at and where they're going, and it's really cool. It's a really nice, it's well-written piece by Adam Vary from Variety, and it has some tidbits in there that are worth noting for us. So one thing they mentioned in there is that there is a new Trek movie in development that had sort of made the rounds in the last week, that there's a movie being set at sort of the in the core universe, in the original timeline, that will sort of be the sort of jumping off point for all Star Trek. So that's interesting, because that's not what they had been talking about. It goes into some of the misadventures over the past few years of which movie is going to get made. There's been a bunch of different people connected to it. So they break that down, but do mention that where we're at right now is a new Trek movie is in development. And that it could be start pre-production by the end of this year. So that's kind of interesting. So that could mean we could see it Trek back in the theaters for the first time in quite a long time, as soon as next year, maybe 2026. So that's kind of neat. And the other thing they mentioned in there is they confirmed the release date for Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 3. We knew that they were up here in Toronto, or more to the point here in Mississauga, actually filming Season 3. I knew they were doing that, but they confirmed that it isn't coming this year at all. It's definitely coming next year. So two good things that we wanted to know about. Are you guys interested or surprised at all that this movie is sort of... do you have faith that this movie is actually going to come out?
Movie, not so much. I was thinking about Strange New Worlds. I was just going through the Spocky, right? So surprised it wasn't on the list of anticipated stuff, but, you know.
Well, again, we knew it wasn't coming this year. I mean, that was the suspicion, because it seemed like they weren't talking about it. They hadn't even started filming it. So I think we didn't put it on the list because it wasn't likely to be coming out this year, and now we know for sure that it's not. So
yeah, and there was Anson Mount posted something about going to dinner with his wife at some restaurant, maybe Mississauga, I don't know, but a few months, like within the last couple of months, he was posting something. So I knew they were filming up here, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and Jonathan Frakes, I think, as well, right?
Yep. And the other thing they mentioned in the article is that they have built a new set at Pinewood Studios, which is, I believe, closer to you, Tim. Mm-hmm. And it takes up the entire studio. And it's for the Starfleet Academy series that they're going to be making with Mary Wiseman. That's going to be filmed just down the block from your place. And yeah, apparently it's the biggest Star Trek set ever built.
Hmm. Interesting.
Cool. So that's kind of neat, too. So we know that series is coming. We don't know when, but they are working on it right now.
Yeah, I was speaking to somebody who knows somebody who's working on that show, but, you know, yeah, interesting stuff. Cool.
I say we start hanging around there.
I just get a, you know, selfie.
Put on our pointy ears and hang out on the street corner in case they need extras.
Yeah, selfie on the chair, maybe, you know. Yeah. Cool.
The next one is about Legacy. So, you know, we talked about they sort of left the door open at the end of the Star Trek Picard 3-season epic, especially the end of the last season where they kind of brought the band back together, that they left the door open to do a next generation. And, you know, the word was, it was, you know, they were talking about the name Star Trek Legacy, that it's going to possibly be this thing. An interview with Den of Geek, Alex Kurtzman, who is sort of the guru of Star Trek right now. He's sort of the overall Star Trek head right now. He basically said, you know, If I had it to my own decision making, I would greenlight it right this second, but there's, you know, a lot of other factors. So what he basically said in a roundabout way is that the show is in limbo, that there's a lot of people who want to work on it, both, you know, in front of the camera, behind the camera, but it sounds like no one's willing to put the money behind it right yet, which I'm not sure what the factors are. He doesn't really get into it too much. He just basically said, it's beyond my control. If I could, I would, but I can't. So for now, it's just waiting out there, which is disappointing, because I think we all thought that that would be an interesting possibility. And it's disappointing that they're not moving forward with it right now.
Yeah, I find that a little bit strange, because it seemed like they built up some pretty good momentum going into it.
Well, and they had that PS scene, right, Jaime?
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought was the lead-in to Legacy. But I don't know. I'm not sure how all of the sort of planning and corporate machinations go into this sort of thing of, like, figuring out what they're going to do.
Yeah. And the last little Trek bit I had in here was just for fun. So there is a game coming up this weekend in the Bundesliga, the German top soccer league, and the team in Berlin is going to be wearing Star Trek themed uniforms. just too fun. If you click on the link in our show notes, you'll see. You can have a look at what they've got. So the game is on Saturday, April 6th. So it may be too late by the time you hear this, but I'm sure you can find the highlights. But FC Union Berlin is going to be wearing these Star Trek themed uniforms. So the crests in the middle of their uniforms. Very, very Trek centric. So yeah, kind of a fun little tie-in around the launch of the new season and that.
It's a good look. Like, you know, it definitely says to the fans of Star Trek, like, oh, wow, you know, it's the Starfleet symbol. The others who are kind of more accustomed to having, I don't know, Xbox or something in there, it doesn't look like it's necessarily branding. It looks like it could also be like their actual logo if you didn't know any better.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's, you know, how often can you intertwine these things? You know, every once in a while, they'll do a fun sort of Star Wars or Star Trek or some kind of crossover with sports, but it's not very often. It's always kind of fun when, you know, there are many of us who like both those worlds, and it's kind of fun when those worlds collide, so... Mm-hmm. So get ready for Christmas, Tim. We're FC Union Berlin jersey will be on the way.
Okay. All right.
So let's move from Star Trek to some Star Wars. We got a couple of cool trailers while we were off. One a few weeks ago and one just dropped this afternoon, which is where we're going to start. So Star Wars Tales of the Empire. So this is a little anthology series, very much like the Tales of the Jedi, which we got last year, focused on Ahsoka and Dooku. This one seems to be focused on Barriss Offee from Clone Wars and... what was the woman's name from Ahsoka?
Yeah, her, the light red lady.
I suppose I should have written that down. She was that memorable a character. But I'll keep talking. You guys can look that up.
Yeah, I'll look it up.
It's the same idea. It's looking at the origins of these characters, how they came to be where they are. But instead of obviously focusing on, you know, the two sort of stories that were juxtaposed in the first one were the story of little Ahsoka and young Dooku and how one rose to, you know, become one with the Force and one rose to become one with the dark side. This one from the trailer we got today, looks like a really, it's Morgan Elsbeth. It just popped into my head. So this one seems to be going back and forth talking about how these two, you know, people sort of leaned into the Empire and found their paths in the dark side. And I'll be curious to see sort of how they juxtapose these two characters' stories. But I'm really kind of excited to learn more about sort of where they are, where they're going, and how we sort of got there. I mean, Barriss' story is really, really interesting. We obviously saw that in Clone Wars, mm-hmm. where she turns her back on the Order and frames Ahsoka, and that leads to Ahsoka leaving the Order. So that's a pretty infamous, you know, story from the Clone Wars. We didn't really know a lot about Morgan Elsbeth's character. And I kind of, that was actually, I thought, one of the weak points of the Ahsoka series was that we didn't have a lot of background for this character. And, you know, we understood a little bit of her motivations, knowing that she was a Night Sister and knowing that she kind of had this legacy, but she didn't really get the time to shine. And so it's kind of cool that we're going to get a little bit of backstory for her. What did you two make of this Tales of the Empire first look?
Well, it's interesting. I didn't really realize it was going to be like the you know, the monikers, the Yoda quote, you know, the hate, the fear, the loathing, you know, sort of leads to the dark side kind of thing. I guess an interesting perspective on there actually was a game, I think, one of the Star Wars games where you play someone who goes into the Empire and then I think turns and becomes part of the rebellion, right?
Right.
I forgot that right. What that was, but sort of same sort of idea, like it, you know, becoming going into the dark side, as it were, right? So
yeah. How about you, Hemi?
It's looking pretty interesting. The shorts are kind of nice little, you know, snackable takes on this world. The Clone Wars animation style is going to work pretty well for this, I think. I'm jazzed. Grievous, Vader, you know, all sorts of stuff in there.
Yeah, and it looks like the Inquisitors are in there. So there's a lot of tie-ins to, you know, we talk about tie-ins to Clone Wars, talking tie-ins to Rebels, it'll be tie-ins to Ahsoka. So I thought that was, you know, there's some good glue in that Tales of the Jedi. I thought this will be interesting to get a little bit more background and sort of see, The other trailer that we got while we were off was Star Wars The Acolyte. So this is a live action series. It's focused on a period 100 years before the events of The Phantom Menace. So in a sort of previously, other than the comic books, obviously, we've got the High Republic, we've got some of that stuff, but we've never really focused on that in a live-action way to see this period of time when, you know, the Jedis are kind of, you know, cocks of the walk. They've kind of got everything under control. There doesn't seem to be any kind of Sith presence, or is there? Because right. The trailer looks like it's kind of the rise of the Sith, right?
Right.
What did you make of this one? I think it was really kind of cool.
Yeah, to be honest, I can't remember it, but yeah, I do looking forward to it, I guess. Well, sort of the Lord of the Rings, or not Lord of the Rings, what's that dragon thing we just watched? You know, the invention of the stuff, right?
Oh yeah, the House of the Dragon, it's kind of a prequel, backstory kind of deal.
Yeah, you know, get to see this sort of stuff. People are hyped about, you know, fun stuff, like yellow lightsabers, you know, something a little different, bring in more of the EU flavor, expanded universe flavor, if not literally the expanded universe itself.
And it's got a pretty killer cast too. So Daphne Keene, who was the young woman in Logan, is in it. Manny Jacinto from The Good Place, Carrie Ann Moss, of course, from The Matrix. Yeah, right. Yep. Like there's a, you know, pretty good sort of ensemble here, but I kind of liked that. I didn't look at it and think, you know, there was a lot of alien characters, and I didn't find myself looking at it being like, oh, there's that, like, other than the Carrie Ann Moss moment, because she's just an icon. I didn't find myself taken out of it. I found myself really just looking at it without, you know, we joke all the time on this podcast about the Tom Cruise moments where you're like, oh, there's Tom Cruise pretending to be that. This just felt like all these interesting characters, and I really felt immersed already. Like, I don't need you to tell me that, you know, some famous actors behind this. I can just look at it and all these great alien characters and be like, cool, tell me a great story. I'm hoping that this is the first real break from the sort of long Skywalker interrelated
saga
around
the word you're looking for.
Absolutely. I think this is one where I'm looking forward to going outside of the 9 movie tie-in saga and just telling me a story in this universe that is something else.
Is it 9 movies or 12 movies?
Well, I guess it depends on who you ask.
But I mean, like the idea of the reason I lent on the word saga is because it just drones on and on after a point, right?
Well, and you know, as long as they don't start it with a crawl that says, for some reason, Emperor Palpatine is back.
Young, you know, young Palpatine.
Yeah, I mean, whatever floats their boats, I suppose.
What was his name? He wasn't Emperor Palpatine. What was his real name?
He was Chancellor Palpatine.
Oh, okay. So he was the same dude. Okay, all right.
Sheev, I guess, is his name.
Yep. Yeah. You know, young Sheev and his pod racer, you know?
Yep. All right. Jaime, what do you got for us?
Yeah, this is going to be, like, super American, but I'm going to try to bring it back together for, you know, cross-cultural sharing here, especially because it seems like Paramount Plus is a thing in Canada now. It's growing, perhaps. So,
you know, can I just get on my soapbox for a minute? Okay,
sure.
So, as you know, I have a Vision Pro, a US Vision Pro, which I have to use with an American Apple ID to get apps, right? Well, Disney Plus works on it, so I'm able to watch Disney Plus shows on it in Canada, right? And I've bought a few movies, you know, with my American Apple ID. Like, I bought Dune when it was on sale for $4.99, which is great because I got to watch it in 3D, which we didn't see that here. We saw the IMAX version here, right?
Yep.
So it's kind of cool to watch it in 3D and Gravity, but we won't talk about Gravity. Well, we can talk about Gravity later, but I can't log into Paramount Plus. So they're obviously doing like the region thing, right? Which I think is bad. Anyway.
Yeah, although this stuff is really weird, I think I mentioned some years ago, I guess almost 5 years now, that it, you know, was accustomed to having Star Trek Discovery on what I believe was CBS All Access at the time. And went to the UK for a conference I was really jet lagged, fell asleep. And when I woke up and started, you know, saying, oh, you know, I better take apart all the stuff that's in my luggage so it doesn't get too stinky, you know, from just being in an enclosed area. Let me go air this out. I said, let me put some Netflix on in the background. I was like, wait, since when do we have Star Trek Discovery on Netflix? Like, that's really weird. And I said, wait a minute, hold on. This whole catalog doesn't make sense. It's like very British. I'm like, oh, because I'm physically in the UK, they're giving me the British catalog versus.
Yeah, I've seen that like, with Netflix in the States. I'll get the American stuff, you know, if I use a Netflix account in the States. And I think when I was in Beijing, I tried to one of the two services, or maybe Disney, I tried that, and some things work, some things didn't work, kind of thing. But you definitely get a different catalog of stuff because it's all regionally like served up, right?
It's really weird though that like distribution doesn't really matter, you know, from like a technology standpoint. So why not just give me my American account, American content, regardless of where I'm at? Like, I know there's legal reasons around this, but it's still very strange. Or they should make it more, you know, more obvious to you and just play, you know, like their national anthem or something as the startup sounds. So I'm like, oh, okay. Welcome to another country.
Yeah, or like a flag or something like that. Yeah. Well, it's interesting. Speaking of which, like the Disney app, right? When I first ran it on a Vision Pro, I could see a menu that said 3D, right? And for like 3 or 4 weeks there, I got the blue, like you get it's a 3D logo, you know, the little Disney thing with the little thing that shoots across the top. That's in 3D. But because it recognizes the fact that I'm in Canada, it wasn't showing me the little 3D menu. Well, they've just recently, I don't know if they've done this on the other TVs or whatever, but it's kind of gone to a green background instead of blue on the Vision Pro, and the 3D menu's back. So I can click on that and see all the 3D content directly, right? So, yeah, so it's kind of weird. It's kind of a weird transition-y time. Hopefully, like, rumor is, and I don't know if it's true or not, but May is supposed to be when it's going to roll out to Canada, UK, and a few other places, right? So, anyway. Just it's odd sort of how they regionally, you know, I mean, you and I both know, I mean, from looking at IP addresses and stuff like that, you can figure out where the person is, right?
Yeah.
And serve up whatever.
And right. And that's why there's all of those, you know, all the YouTubers have VPN as VPN networks as their sponsors. So it's like, oh
really?
Just pretend you're in Italy while you're sitting there in LA kind of thing, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well the it's interesting because like VPN kind of works sometimes, like, you know, it'll work in some cases, but yeah, it's getting they're getting pretty good about detecting whether you're on a VPN too, right? I did get to experience the great firewall in China too. That was kind of interesting. You know, I couldn't use Safari to do searches. It kept switching over to Bing.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I published a course on Codico, which is, they use Vimeo for their player. And Vimeo doesn't run at all in China, so, but YouTube does, right? So it's kind of weird.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't use a VPN there?
No. Like it was. Well, you could use a VPN, and you should use a VPN if you're in China, but you cannot, like, the stuff will not, like, you can't, like, GitHub was really slow, Safari, Google, DuckDuckGo, all those, you know, sort of, quote-unquote, safe browsers don't work at all. So I kept like all week I was like searching for stuff. And, oh yeah, I got to go to Bing and then search for Bing. And then there's all the Chinese stuff that you can use. Like the weather app doesn't really work there. You have to use QWeather, which is their own app.
Hmm.
Right. So yeah.
Interesting.
And every time you said something to like one of the other developers, they'd kind of like go, yeah, that's the way it is. Somehow they work around it. But you know. Anyway, back to you and your American America.
Yeah. So I'm guessing you guys have not traditionally gotten these Paramount Plus ads that are, they're kind of nifty. They take various characters from various disjointed properties and put them on a mountain because, you know, like the mountain in Paramount, and then have some little wacky, you know, skit, like a very minor skit. This one's whole setup is, oh, we're stuck. We need to get over this wall. We have this rope. The Miami quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, is there, and they're like, hey, you know, if we had like a football, we could tie it to the rope and throw it on there and get up there. And they're like, oh, we don't have a football. And they realize that they have Hey Arnold, a child with a Stewie Griffin football-shaped head. And Tua Tagovailoa refuses to throw the child, but Sir Patrick Stewart says, I'm going to do it, and just goes off into, you know, he's an Englishman, right, in real life, and just goes off into this wild rant of, like, how it's the fifth quarter, and he needs to get a hole-in-one before the seventh inning stretch, and then hurls the child. Like, it's
wearing, like, 1950s football pads, too.
Yeah, yeah, it reminded me of, like, you know, our Heisman Trophy and what that looks like from that padding era, or if you've seen any of those old Disney cartoons with Goofy, or, like, Goofy teaches you the rules of football kind of thing.
Yep.
This one was one that, in particular, was during the Super Bowl as a spot, but they've shown it a few times since then.
Yeah, we tend to get a lot of the Super Bowl ads on YouTube the next day, so which is fine. Like, they show us special Canadian ads, you know, whoop-de-doo. Lots of ads for, you know, they bring in all the great Canadian celebrities to talk about maple syrup and poutine on sale and stuff. It's good.
They did a Dave Grohl thing 2 years ago, I think, right? Where they had,
that's true. They did do the, like, Why Canada Rocks with Dave Grohl. That was good. Yeah.
All right, what else you got, Jaime?
Yeah, well, continuing the theme of Paramount Plus, after the success of the first Sonic the Hedgehog movie, you know, after its rough start, it got on the right track. Successful second movie, Sonic 2. They now have a limited series coming out for the Knuckles the Echidna character. That's coming out on Paramount Plus in the US and Canada on April 26th. So, got the link here in the show notes. Those of you transporting at home.
Right on.
Still voiced by Idris Elba. So, yeah. They paid the money to get the voice actor.
Yep. I would like to know how much he's making for that.
Yeah.
Somehow I wouldn't. It would just make me cry.
Yeah, fair.
Switching to a totally different streaming service, you know, Netflix just likes to throw stuff at the wall. You know, it sometimes has these interesting higher budget films or series, usually starring a celebrity that you would know and having kind of a you know, pretty straightforward plot. But it looks like this year's version is going to be Atlas, which I've described here as J-Lo getting the robot, where Jennifer Lopez is the main character. In some sort of, you know, world where mechas, you know, suits, robots, giant ones that can blow stuff up real good, I'm sure, and punch each other are a key part of society or war, or who knows? It's a teaser. We haven't seen the real trailer yet.
Huh.
Yeah.
Weird. Well, sure.
Okay.
It does well on a Sunday afternoon, folks. Like, you know. If it's not this, it's Paw Patrol, you know, round five or wherever they're on now when you're doing laundry and washing dishes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Netflix is still reliable for the while I'm doing chores crowd.
And I've also got the link here. For those who don't know the Getting the Robot meme, it's from the Neon Genesis Evangelion, the Lost Four Kids. That's the number four kids opening where somebody decided to make a trailer or an opening intro song from the perspective of the era of, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, where Japanese animation was making its way to the States, but was always sort of Americanized in weird ways to show up on, I believe it was Fox, is where 4Kids showed up. Like, let's take these shows that are kind of all ages, kind of more slightly adultish, and trim them or just redub them or do little cultural tweaks to make it more palatable or perceived palatable for American school children. So sometimes they'd radically change some of the tone and flavor of, like, that person didn't get sick. They died in the original series. or, you know, it was like, well, these two, you know, like, girl characters or these two boy characters, they're just really good friends. I'm like, no, they don't have that kind of relationship. You're really changing the flavor of this to make it more, quote unquote, kids friendly. So Neon Genesis Evangelion is one of those cultural touchstones that has still kind of been going on forever in terms of various series, various movies, and would be 100% inappropriate to put on normal Fox Saturday morning cartoons or weekday afternoon cartoons.
Yeah, I hadn't really watched much of that series, and I sat down and watched the first few episodes maybe a year ago, and there's a lot of weirdness to that to the stuff already, even in the first few episodes. Like at one point, there's like a weird kind of like, maybe that full grown adult lady wants to sleep with that small child. Like it's a little weird.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It caught me off guard. Wasn't expecting it. Was just like, oh.
Believe it or not, that part is relatively tame compared to where some stuff goes in the like just deconstruction of everything it is to be human and being an adult or being a teenager on the verge of adulthood and dealing with a post-apocalyptic society. While also these big giant creatures are trying to kill humanity. Just put that in the background.
Right.
So gentlemen, I believe everyone here has seen the fourth Matrix movie, Resurrections. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed.
How are you feeling about the fifth Matrix movie, notably without the Wachowskis, that I have entitled Matrix 5, The Search for More Money? Especially like for folks who have seen the movie, like it's a great takedown of like, this movie shouldn't even exist. It's an extremely meta movie. So I'm guessing the money is good. The money is good. So like, let's do it again.
Yeah. I think it's like anything else as far as extended sequels. Tell me a good story, you know, I'll keep an open mind, but tell me a good story. You know, so many of these things have just kind of gone off the rails. I mean, you can make a case that Matrix could have stopped at one and, and I'd have been fine with that, but you know, now we're looking at five. I could have done without two. I could have done without three. Could have done without four. Let's see what they do on five.
Yeah. I mean, four had an interesting start to it, you know, where it's kind of like he's made this game and called the Matrix and kind of that made a sense, right?
Yeah. I don't think it was a bad movie. I just don't think it was a great movie. You know, like I felt like there was some stuff there, but there was also a lot of inexplicable, like, well, you know, why do they look like that? But wait a minute, didn't they both die? But why? No, wait, they didn't really both die. Like it just.
Well, yeah, I mean that was the part of the disbelief part was in episode three was the that this happened has happened before and it'll happen again and again and again and just sort of like rinse and repeat, right? So
yeah, it all kind of strained credulity, which I get. Obviously, we're sci-fi fantasy fans. You kind of have to check your brain at the door sometimes, but that one. It took a little bit further than I might feel comfortable with sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, like the first Matrix was so mind altering in a sense, right? Because, you know, I think we've all had that sort of fantasy is this really happening or are we in a simulation, right? Kind of thoughts, yeah. Right? And they kind of really played that well. Yep. But the whole hero's journey, he's the one sort of conceit. I mean, that gets a little tired after a while, right?
Well, especially after four and now five movies. So again, tell me something cool. I think the visuals are great. I think the ideas of the concepts of the Matrix are great. Yeah. I'm curious to see. I mean, Drew Goddard's a good creator. I mean, you know, he wrote the script for The Martian. That was a great adaptation of a great book.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he's done a lot of TV, did the Daredevil TV show. He was the showrunner on that for the first season. So, I mean, this is somebody who has credentials. He worked on Buffy and Angel and stuff like that. You know, this is a person with a pedigree. If he's got something to say, you never know, right? I mean, I thought that Watchmen series was going to be terrible, but then it was great. So yeah, you never know.
Good. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's so true.
We'll take a wait and see on that one.
Yeah.
I had to bring us to some bad news that we shared around on our Slack channel this week. Unfortunately, earlier this week, Chance Perdomo, who was one of the stars of the Boys spinoff Gen V, tragically died in a motorcycle accident. Mm-hmm. So he played what was the name of his character? Ugh, I can't even remember. Tells you everything you need to know about that show. But yeah, I mean, he's 27 years old, you know, huge sort of shock outpouring. It was a single vehicle accident. He clearly lost control of his vehicle and died. You know, it is an absolute tragedy and really, really sad. They were actually just gearing up to start filming season two of that. Again, also filmed here in the GTA. So, they haven't really come back. Obviously, this is really fresh. This is only a few days ago. What this is going to mean for the show, how they're going to, you know, they probably have to go back to the drawing board because this was one of the main characters. His arc was really good. I thought he was a really good performer in the first season. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's a horrible, horrible tragedy to lose someone at that age, and beyond that, obviously, as a fan of the series, it's left it in major limbo. It's hard to say what they're going to be able to do next to write around that or recast that or who knows what. But more importantly, a very talented young person's lost their life, and that's just tragic.
Yeah, he played Andre Anderson in the
Andre. Show. That's right, Andre. Yeah. Like I say, it was a bit of an ensemble piece that first season. Obviously, multiple characters, multiple sort of arcs and stuff like that. But he was good, and the series was good. And it's very disappointing that we won't be seeing more of him. Another good one this week. Good interview with Jonathan Nolan, who is one of the co-creators of Westworld and brother of Christopher Nolan, the director. He said that he's not done with Westworld, in spite of the fact that Westworld was canceled by HBO. He fully anticipates that in some form he will eventually come back to it. Now, as we talked about when the show was canceled, and we talked about sort of the why and wherefores, and obviously not only was it canceled, but it was actually scrubbed off HBO and sold off to other streaming services, and it was kind of a whole kerfuffle. Where he would do this, with whom he would do it, because it was an all-star cast. So how you get all those famous people back together to do something is a different point. But yeah, really kind of interested to see what he means. But I like the idea that the door is still a little bit open on this, because you could say that 4 ended okay and that sort of circles back to season 1. But I do feel like there was more to do there.
Still have to finish season 3 or 4, whatever one it was. I stopped watching.
Yeah,
I never did pick up season 4. And by the time I was going to, I was like, well,
that's the one with Jesse Pinkman, right? Or is that the one?
Yeah, well, he's not, that's not the first season.
3 and 4.
Yeah.
3 and 4. Okay.
Yeah, it's worth finishing. I mean, it's still very stylish. It's still very fun. There's some good twists. And again, it's just a killer cast, rather. Mm-hmm. I highly recommend, season 1 is probably the best of them. Season 2 is a little confusing. Season 3 is even more confusing. And season 4 is a little more straightforward. But in the end, I'm not sure it lived up to everything it could have been. But I still think that the story is not done. And if a creator wants to finish telling you their story, you hope that they get the chance to do that. So
yeah. For those who are driving at home, you can watch it on Apple TV.
Yeah, who knows?
In Canada,
knows?
That is, yeah.
Yeah. A couple quick things to finish up our headlines. So Julia Garner, one of the stars of Ozark, has just been announced that she's joining the cast of the Fantastic Four movie. Tim, I know you're an Ozark fan. I am too. She was amazing in that. She's been great in every performance I've seen her in. She's going to be playing Shalabal. For any comic nerds out there, that is the Silver Surfer's love of Silver Surfer's life. So that means that we are getting a big hint as to what kind of story they're going to be telling when this movie comes out in 2025. Sounds like it's going to be Galactus and the Silver Surfer and that whole sort of classic storyline. So interesting to see how they do that with modern technology, and hopefully it'll be a hell of a lot better than when the other Fantastic Four movie tried to do that. And the last one was a story from the CBC today. It was just a little pullout, but apparently as lucky as we continue to get on these things. So if you recall, when Netflix started doing its password crackdown last year, they started in smaller markets outside of America. They started here in Canada. We get to be the lucky guinea pigs this time again. Disney Plus, apparently during the earnings call this week, Bob Iger, the CEO of Disney, announced that the password crackdown that they announced last year is going to be starting in earnest soon, and they're going to be starting in smaller markets. Guess who gets the first kick in the butt? That's right, it's us. So yeah, we're gonna get another early can we make sure that you people aren't sharing your passwords thing here. So yeah, we're gonna be the first ones out of the gate to test out the new you can't do that here policy. And once it rolls out here and they start working out the kinks, then of course it'll be rolled out to all the other markets. And so, yeah, we're now moving into an era where Disney Plus is going to be looking to make sure that everybody who's using the service is paying for the service. And on top of that, they're also looking at making sure that you're paying for the right tier too, so that, you know, they can add the commercials in and all the other stuff that they want to do to try and extra monetize the service, which, in spite of the fact that it is now the number two service behind Netflix, is still a long way behind Netflix as far as usership, subscribership, and everything else, and has a long way to go to catch up. So
All right, well, we'll dive into the main part of the show, which is why we're here, and that's because Star Trek Discovery has come back on the air for the final season, season 5, with a two-part premiere. So we got two episodes this morning, and we can dive right in. I guess we'll start with our pitches.
Yes.
Okay, I'll go first. Michael Burnham and the Horcruxes.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Same theme. I had Welcome to Star Trek Discovery, the search for the power of creation.
Right.
Yeah, I took two cracks at this. I decided to call the first option Space Seed as a nice option. We'll get to why. And the really tortured Lax Go to the Mall Today. That's the deepest cut I could do on this predominantly Canadian show.
Goodness.
Yeah. For folks who are just driving at home and wondering what the heck is he talking about. So if you watched How I Met Your Mother, the Robin character turned out to be not only secretly Canadian, but also a Canadian pop star. And Let's Go to the Mall Today was like the big song that she had.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that's good. Good one. So, yeah, this was the big, yet another MacGuffin mission where it's like, hey, we better go find that thing.
Yeah.
That everyone else is looking for before we get to that thing. Time to go look for the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, we can't, you know, and the whole sort of, like you've got here right at the top, the red directive thing, which, again, we don't even know what a red directive is, right? So, you know.
We can infer that from what they were talking about, but it's kind of funny that they talked about that like kind of incessantly all episode that it's a red directive, but they never once say what a red directive actually is.
Right, right. And I shudder every time she says black alert, you know, like, really? You know, because red wasn't good enough for you people, you know?
Yeah.
The closest I could think of is analogous, although it was a lot more mysterious to the crew and explained a little bit more as kind of a counterpart, was the Omega Directive from Voyager. If you remember that one, the Omega molecule. Yep. It's super dangerous. We're like, just take the Prime Directive and throw it out the window if you have to, because this thing is so dangerous. I thought it was a little bit more like that, but it seems to be more of a clandestine, like, trust us, the government is telling you this is for the betterment of everybody. Do whatever you got to do to solve the problem.
Yeah, just shut up and get your COVID shot.
Yeah. All right.
So the first episode, Red Directive, the pew pew pew. I had the sand runners. So they got these essentially speeder bikes.
Yeah.
Or snowmobiles that go on the sand. And they had this, you know, it felt very Star Trek 10. It was very Nemesis, the sort of scene where they're whizzing around on these things and pew pew pewing and stuff like that. So yeah,
it's also Phantom Menace too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, possible little pod racy.
Yeah, and in my elevator picture, I was going to work in Serenity somewhere, because he right off the bat, Lekak or whatever his name is, says shiny a couple of times in both this show.
I did hear shiny.
So. Which is not a word we've used in Star Trek lore before, but, you know, those of us from Serenity fans know what that means, right? So,
yep.
Yeah, and it was kind of, I felt, it's again that George Lucas got to have a car race in the middle of the whatever movie he's making kind of feel to it, right? So,
yeah, I mean, again, it's a, theoretically it's a sci-fi show, it's an action show, you want to show something that's, you know, kind of try and keep the people who aren't as into the science and exploration parts of it engaged. I get it, but
yeah, and crashing the two ships into to use their shields to stop the avalanche kind of thing, you know.
So yeah, it was a cool scene. You know, we've never really seen shields deployed like that. It's, again, it's very rare you see a starship enter orbit at all, unless it's named Voyager.
Yeah.
So to see two starships, like, basically, like, go nose down and you know, pop the shields up to try and deflect an avalanche is a pretty cool effect. So,
and the writing's sort of, the writing's a bit telegraphy because, like, you know, it's like, you know, oh, they could start an avalanche. Oh, they won't start an avalanche, but they could start an avalanche, or we could start an avalanche. Let's oh, look, they've started an avalanche. Oh, let's stop the avalanche. We've got to stop the avalanche now, right? So, and Michael's prime directive changed like three times in the show, right? And she's on this, like, this red directive thing is supposed to take precedence over everything else. Like you said, throw the rule book out the window. And she kept saying, the mission is this now, right? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Well, and that's it. Like, because they never explain what the red directive is.
Yeah.
They're kind of making up as they go, which was weird.
Yeah. And then the whole conflict with, I always forget the name of the other captain.
Rainer.
That just kept going on and on. It stretched into both episodes, right? And.
Yep.
And where we end up with was kind of not really surprising, you know, so.
No, not at all.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Any other pew-pews for you guys?
There was the surfing thing that she did on the ship at the beginning, right?
Mm.
Yeah, those are my two. The Michael rides the ship from the beginning, and the flying the two ships into the dirt were kind of the big pieces.
Yep.
Yeah.
For the Easter eggs, there was definitely some good ones in the first episode. Yeah. At the beginning, they talk about, well, it's the, you know, millennium anniversary of the founding of the Federation. It's 2061. But we know that this series is set in 3191 because last season was 3190.
Yeah.
So they do say give or take a couple decades. It wasn't easy to celebrate during the burn. So they kind of acknowledge it, but it is a little weird that they're toasting the founding of the Federation in the 1030th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
The character of Fred.
That was interesting.
Clearly Sungian android, you know, looking more like Data than not. And certainly less. We established a couple seasons ago with Gray. Gray gets a sort of a humanoid body to inhabit, goes from being sort of the spirit to being an actual physical person again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was kind of an interesting callback. I was actually a little disappointed when that character was, like, snuffed out so quickly. I was like, Fred.
But is he? I mean, like, he's an android. Can't they bring him back later on? Like, reassemble him?
That is the curious thing, too. Like, at what point is it, like, what do you do to, like, we see Data get shot countless times in the series over the years. Like, again, at what point is an synthetic life form alive, quote unquote alive, and quote unquote dead?
Alive for 600 years too, right? And then suddenly just instantly dead. Like, wouldn't he have been shot before?
You know? Well, and that's, you know, again, if this character is now 600 years old and is on this little planet and has these, like, bodyguards and everything, like, maybe don't let the bad guys take their weapons in don't let them, you know, solve their problem for them and then be like, cool, I've got what I need, I'll give you $5 for it. Like,
yeah,
a little bit weak on the writing there, but that's all right.
Yeah, he ended up being my big question of, like, is he actually dead? Because, you know, we've seen Data without his head and he can clearly be okay without that. So I'm like, well, they didn't shoot the head, from what I recall. It looks like it was more the body, and it would be a weird sort of, you know, casting and character writing choice of, like, why would you add all of this, you know, all of these tidbits of making the makeup reminiscent and the style reminiscent of Brent Spiner's version of Data, the AS number that was... Alton Soong, like, why would you make all of these references and then be like, okay, well, that character was there on screen for like 2 minutes. I felt like the question was, will this come up again?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. No, it's a fair point. A couple more Easter eggs. So one of the things that they deliver to Fred is, along with isolinear chips and some pads, and of course the big MacGuffin, is the self-sealing stem bolts, which of course is a huge running gag in DS9, the self-sealing stem bolts. And of course the progenitors, which is what this was all, this whole arc seems to be tied to, is this, is this now infamous episode of TNG that tried to explain away why every race that they encounter are biped, bi-armed, you know, two eyeballs, one nose, two ears creatures. And it was kind of a weak episode at the time, and I'm a little nervous that this is where they're going with this. But here we are. Anybody else's red alert go off on this one?
Yeah, and then, well, just one more thing is that the payment still happens to be Latinum in a, you know, like after all this time, 800 years or whatever it is. But yeah, it it does seem to be, it's like, it's that same, and you know, do they have to keep explaining the reason why I keep saying there's something wrong with Star Trek is that everybody has two legs, two arms, two eyes, and a nose, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and they do talk about humanoid. They say everybody's a humanoid, right? So, yeah.
Which is racist. Let's face it. In this universe, that's racist.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk. We'll continue talking about that as we go through these the rest of this stuff. Any other Easter eggs that caught anyone's eye?
Well, shiny, like I mentioned before.
Shiny. Right? Yeah. That was. Yeah. You're right. They said it more than once too. I was like, ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, he says it again in the second episode, too.
Someone someone on the writing staff was a fan?
Yeah, maybe. It's a throwback, I guess.
Some fun quotes for the They Said What. When the Discovery and the Antares lose the bad guys, Kovich leans over to Burnham and says, "This is the part where you say you have a brilliant idea." Again, yes. Love that guy. Saru, there is much to consider, but for now, Fred. Tilly, I'm so glad Mary Wiseman is back. I'm so glad Tilly is back. She's always the best part of this show. She was very much missed last season. I think that's one of the reasons why last season didn't land as well for me. It was just a little too dry, and she definitely brings a levity and a humor to the show that is much needed. When they're trying to figure out, when she's trying to figure out the best teaching method for her Starfleet Academy class, I can't crash all these kids onto an ice moon in order to teach them that, right? Could I? No, it's not feasible, is it? Again, nice callback to the episode where, of course, she gets the first batch of recruits to sort of bond, you know, and that's also the episode where we see her make the decision that she's going to go to the academy and be a teacher and stuff like that. But yeah, that was a very funny. And again, Mary Wiseman, so funny. Her delivery is so good. Rainer, when he walks in, when he beams in between Book and Burnham, I love the feeling of interrupting something. And Book talking about Maul and Lack. If I didn't hate these guys, I might like them.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
The one that stuck out to me is kind of a, I don't know, kind of an interesting one that you can sort of use in real life is Maul telling Lack, you know, do you want the pebbles or the mountain? And it, it doesn't sound too TV show-ish to, like, just prepare yourself for a work meeting at some point where you want to convince people, no, let's not just, let's not just go for the pebbles here. Let's go for the mountain.
Yeah. I look forward to hearing on our Slack channel eventually when you use that one in a meeting, Jaime.
Just make it happen.
Yeah, and the sort of the exit of what's his name? Who plays Saru?
Oh, Doug Jones.
Yeah, Doug Jones. I guess leaving the show or...
Well, I'm curious about this.
Yeah.
So, you know, as we saw with Mary Wiseman last season leaving, you know, to go be the teacher, and she took a break from the show and now has come back and she's assigned to the ship for this mission. Like, yep, that'll do. That's fine. You know, same way Worf used to just show up for no reason whenever they'd have a movie, right? Like, yeah cool. Yeah. Just, I don't care how he got there. I care that he's there. Yeah, I think it'll be interesting. Like, obviously, they're going to do the wedding at some point. So, you know, not jumping ahead to spoil something from episode two that we're going to talk about in a minute, but Tarina and Saru are getting married at some point in this season. I'm sure that even though they sort of bill the second episode as Saru leaving, it's definitely...
Well, she proposes in the first episode, but the reason obviously they're taking Saru out of the picture as number one is because they want to have spoilers for episode two, another person step in, right?
Yeah,
and to create some dynamic tension as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The outside of the universe thing of like Doug Jones, he's getting up there and kind of wanting to, not you know, go through the punishment on his body to do all the things he has to do with the prosthetics and everything. I think him hanging around, this is the fifth and final season of Discovery, him hanging around as like what he said of like, oh, wouldn't it be nice if Discovery had somebody that's on the inside, but not literally inside the ship and can go access other databases and do some things that they can't do in an official capacity under Michael Burnham's command.
Yeah, so I'm sure what they did was get him into his costume and filmed for like, you know, a couple days, all these little interstitials that he needed for the whole season. And then he was like, cool, now I don't have to do this every day for
Well, he was on the Ready Room. I don't know if you guys watched the Ready Room, but he was talking about the fact not having to put those shoes on anymore and stuff like that, and the rubber.
Oh, it's got to be brutal. I mean, he was, I saw a clip from him the other day on social media where he was basically saying like, I will not miss wearing the mask that much. Like usually he's obviously Doug's had an amazing, like, and just an absolutely iconic career as a character behind the mask, you know, from The Shape of Water to Hellboy to all these different parts he's played, you know, the Guillermo del Toro movies. I mean, this is absolutely an icon playing these behind the mask roles. But you know, yet as you pointed out, Jaime, you know, the man's in his 60s now. I'm sure he's like, I don't want to wear vinyl on my face, you know, all the time. Mm-hmm. It's understandable that he's ready to walk away from that part of it. But yeah, I'm sure we haven't seen the last of Saru at the end of the second episode. I'm sure we'll see him throughout the season. There's no way they're not going to have him around for the sort of denouement of this series. That would be ridiculous. Should we jump to second episode and we'll go over that a little bit?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So this is episode two, Under the Twin Moons. So in the first episode, they get this sort of clue to go look for this twin moon. And so in the first episode, we also see, for us, there's no big break. I mean, obviously last season, Book was kind of the bad guy, one of the bad guys. Mm-hmm. As far as trying to get revenge when his planet gets decimated, and now he's kind of trying to make good. So he's doing sort of whatever the Federation and Starfleet tell him to do to try and make amends for the fact that he, you know, broke a lot of rules last year. They establish that it's been a long time since he and Burnham have spoken and that he was away from the crew and stuff like that. Now he's basically right back on the ship. So it's Grudge the Cat. And so now there's this sort of awkwardness, this kind of weirdness between Book and Burnham. But yeah, he's kind of back in the picture. But for us, obviously, not really that gone. So
yeah.
Elevator pitch.
My title for this was Raiders of the Lost Art. With the T at the end there. Yeah.
I had the Queen of Second Chances finally has one to offer someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I had this episode really disjointed for me. I couldn't, you know, I had to keep hitting a rewind and watching parts again because it was just all out of order.
Yeah. The pew, pew, pew. It wasn't a huge pew, pew, pew episode, although the attack of the killer eyeballs that flew out of the statue and went after Saru and Burnham on their sort of farewell mission together. That was pretty good. You know, we're losing our foot. Who lost a foot? Yeah, it was...
I'm losing body parts here, she says. Yeah, that
was... Yeah. That was good. Any other pew-pew-pew moments? There wasn't a lot, was there?
It kind of blends into the eyeball, the floating eyeball thing. And my Easter egg hunt, my they said what kind of blend together. So the they said what was Action Saru.
Yeah,
which
yes, Action Saru.
Later on, and that action
we all call him that, don't we?
Yeah. And in that action sequence, I was like, oh, yes, Action Saru comes with quill shooting feature. Yeah. Squeeze his legs together and he shoots the quills.
Well, they showed the stuntman running through the forest. Apparently they had like a rubber mat that they pulled behind a vehicle as he ran down it to make him look like he was running really fast.
Oh, yeah, because he was bolting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's how they did that.
Yeah, remember that episode where he was like freaking out on some planet and it was just like this scary predator kind of thing? It was like really clear that this guy who sort of gangly, walks around kind of weird, kind of sways when he walks and seems very calm. It's like, no, this creature is strong. Like it's like a chimpanzee or gorilla in terms of strength difference. And they use that right to desecrate this like Olmec statue and move it aside so they could find the piece of the puzzle they needed.
Yep. Yeah. He's not renowned for his muscles, but he certainly got them.
Mm-hmm.
Easter eggs. I had just one, which is obviously they circled. They talked about Beta Z, the planet, obviously home to one of our favorites. And then on top of that, Trill. So there was a reference earlier in the episode where Adira is in engineering with Tilly and mentions Gray's name. And I was like, well, you don't bring that up unless you're going somewhere. And you know, in the foreshadowing. And of course, you know, then by the end of the episode, they figure out that where they need to go next to look for the next piece of the big MacGuffin is to go to Trill. And so, you know, that obviously is going to bring Adira and Gray into the spotlight for the next episode. And obviously Trill's in a very important world for, you know, we saw them when we moved into the far-flung future and where they are as far as, you know, the Trills. And then, obviously, this is a long-standing world in the Federation. So, interesting to see what comes of all that.
Yeah. Well, there was a bit of a sneak peek on the Ready Room as well for that.
Yeah. Couple of good quotes. Similar to yours, Jaime, I had Burnham's line, "Action Saru, damn!" Just, I think that should be on a t-shirt somewhere. And I'd hate to miss your wedding because I'm dead. That was pretty good. The big question I had was something that really bothered me. So they go to this planet, Burnham and Saru, and they can't go into this area. They have to hike because they can't get past this electromagnetic field. Okay, I get it. Fine. So they're walking through these woods, which looked surprisingly like the woods around here, Tim. And as a matter of fact, if you looked closely, there were maple trees. And the way they try and alien it up is that these sort of strange spores or something are falling constantly. They're clearly done in CGI. Fine. I get that.
Yeah.
But these things are falling constantly. So these two are having these like heartfelt conversations and I'm getting distracted while they're having these heartfelt conversations because these things are falling constantly and never land on them.
Right, right.
And oh my God, it bothered me. It bothered me incessantly.
In the middle of that, she says, there's no life signs. Well, what?
Yeah.
Like, you know. You're standing amongst trees and there's things falling all over you and like snowflakes or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like I say, that one kind of annoyed me. I was like, really? We're really? Okay. Sure.
Maybe they were only visible on your Vision Pro.
Yeah. So this episode was all sort of building up towards where I think all three of us knew it was going, which is, hey, Saru's leaving. Who's going to be the number one? You got to think somewhere on this ship, somebody like, you know, I don't know, Reese or Owoshkun or someone is like, hey, like, I've been on this crew. Remember where we used to live like 800 years ago? We've gone through hell and back. I've gone to the edge of the universe with you. Like, where's my promotion? What the hell? But no, they promote Rayner. And we didn't mention it before. So Rayner is of course, Callum Keith Rennie. He's a Canadian actor who's been, he was in Galactica. He's been in for a Canadian, he's been in everything. Like he's been on like 45 CBC shows over the years. Like this is a well-known Canadian actor.
Yeah. And he's that guy though, right?
He's that guy. I mean, I know him just because of Galactica and a few other things, but like, yeah, he's not somebody who everyone immediately recognizes, but they know that guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so of course, in the first episode, he, you know, accidentally is responsible for this avalanche that they have to stop people from getting killed in. He gets called under the carpet at the beginning of this episode. And of course, by the end of the episode, we find out that Vance has basically told him that he can't be the captain of his ship anymore and has told him to retire, and he's bummed out. And of course, that's when Burnham gets the brilliant idea that, you know, was telegraphed in 67 places that he's going to be the new number one. So yeah, mixing things up a little bit, which is, you know, mm-hmm. just one death away from being the second Canadian captain of the flagship of the Federation.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, interesting development. I mean, not a terrible character. What do you guys think of Rayner? He's kind of a bit of a stereotype, the sort of grizzled old, I'll do it, you know, I'll do the right thing even if it means my career kind of character. Is a little bit sort of a little bit predictable in that way, but also still kind of likable, and you can feel that he's somebody who cares. Like, they did a good job with him, but not, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of like he's, you know, you look around the room and see who the asshole is, and if you don't see one, you are it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Very much that.
Yeah.
My take that I think other people online have kind of come to the same conclusion is that his character is kind of like Shaw in Picard season 3, meant to show like that mirror back to the characters. And in this case, it's actually kind of similar, but I think taking a look back at the arc of Michael Burnham, right? Michael Burnham as number one under Georgiou was kind of that person, right? Of like, oh, we have to shoot the Klingons first. It's the thing we should do, the Vulcan salute, right? And if you don't do this, I'm going to mutiny and take over the ship to do this thing. Like, I am right. Rayner does the same thing, and arguably maybe had the right decision of like, we need to stop these guys. It's a red directive. Do we have to blow up a village? Absolutely blow up the village. And Michael says no, because Michael is no longer the Michael Burnham of the first season, right? She's progressed, and I think she's going to show here how, like, yeah, that's basically what, you know, Captain Georgiou did, putting up with me, you know, grinding against the authority all the time.
Yeah, no, it's a good point. I think they've already established that, you know, Burnham's a different person. She's changed, and Saru mentions that, like, oh, you've come a long way, you know, and yeah, maybe she needs that kind of person, and so they've sort of set it up nicely. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see what the dynamic shift is like with them. So do you think he gets Saru's old quarters complete with the plants that eat you and everything?
Yeah, it does seem rather moist in there. Like, you just have to like constantly keep trying to dehydrate yourself.
She did say we wouldn't move his. We'll keep your room the way you left it when you go off to college and when you come home, right? She did say that to Saru, that we'll keep it the way it is.
Yeah, they just don't mention if somebody else is going to have to live there in the interim, because that would suck.
Yeah, well, unless you like that kind of thing.
Yeah, I like it swampy.
Yeah, and moist.
And moist. Yeah, great word.
The big question for me was, who was Maul as a little girl? Because Booker seemed to know her and had some sort of...
She was the daughter of Booker the Fourth, he said.
Yeah, right? But yep. I mean, that's what he says, and it kind of makes sense given the heritage of the Booker names, persona. I forget exactly the heritage that he has there. It's not like his real name.
Yeah, it's almost like a moniker. Right?
Moniker.
They use it.
Yeah.
Like Dick Turpin, yeah.
Yeah, and so I don't fully understand the relationship here, if it is
how come she doesn't recognize him?
Well, you get the impression maybe she does. Like, she does give him a little side eye, because when he says my name is Cleveland Booker, she kind of gives him a bit of a wider eye, right?
Yeah, but you know, she's saying, I don't believe you are a traitor or whatever it is that he says he is, right? So
yeah, I mean, that's, I think it's just supposed to show that she's somebody who is very untrusting, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
I mean, the other thing, this...
You don't look like that guy who was nice to me.
Well, this happens to me in real life, where it's usually my mother would be like, oh, son, do you remember this person from when you were little? I'm like, I was like five. No, I don't. I'm in my 40s now. Yeah. I was like, have I not seen this person for those decades? Like, no, I don't. I'm not going to recognize this person from a very distant part of my early life and having to age them up into, you know, I mean, at that age, all the adults are like the Peanuts adults, right? They don't really have phases. And you're like, wah, 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 wah. Like, that's all you remember.
Yeah, the only time you remember somebody from your childhood is like one of your parents or grandparents' friends, is if they happen to give you good candy or something.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So off to a decent start, I would say. I mean, you know, it was interesting. I didn't know that they were going to do two episodes at once. I must admit, I didn't click in on that. So I was pleasantly surprised when I woke up this morning and found two episodes waiting for me. And I think it's good that they did these two. I don't think it would have been a very satisfying start if they'd just done the first one.
Right.
So yeah, I don't think that was a bad idea.
But it's a trend too. Like Apple's been doing, they dropped three shows in a row, and you know they did that with Andor and Disney. So
yeah, and Prime did that with a few of the, like The Boys drops like three or four, and then finishes them off and stuff. So yeah, I don't think it's a bad idea. In a little bit, we'll talk about Three Body Problem and some of the other stuff that we watched while we were off. But there's some of these series where, again, they sort of drop everything at once. And, you know, you're like, well, is that a good thing? In this case, yeah, I think it was definitely the right choice.
All right, should we move on to our watch list? All righty. First time, for the watch list.
Yeah, what had just finished about a week or two ago on Paramount Plus is the second season of Halo. So yeah, I do recommend it if, with the caveat, you were emotionally okay with the first season. I do think it has dramatically improved the season. They clearly took notes from the fans that said, you know, maybe we're just a little too far away from the source material. Let's bring it a little closer. They do more of that. I do think it's better. They do frustratingly still put the actor's real face instead of the helmet out for too long. Like I don't get it in a post Mandalorian era where you can have people or heck, even the Bad Batch, where I'm like, oh, I could clearly see, you know, characters sigh, even though I can't actually hear them doing it. I can see it in the animation. I can see the emotion in the helmets. Like, again, if you really hated season one, you're not going to like season two. If you were like, yeah, I'm okay with season one, then I think you would like season two better.
So when you say they sort of brought it closer to the series or to the video games, I mean, are we talking characters, weapons, settings?
A lot of all of that. I mean, it certainly helps that time wise, it's a lot closer. It covers the fall of Reach, so it's a lot closer to the video games rather than being almost semi-prequel in the first season. Mm. It is a series entitled Halo, and it's taking two seasons to get there, kind of thing. Semi-spoilers. It's like Star Trek Enterprise. You know, by the fourth season, they'll get on the Enterprise. It's kind of going there, right? So I think that's what's been helping. Some of the tone, some of the, like, yeah, these other secondary characters, let's not focus so much on them. They still try to like loop them in and try to wrap them up a bit, but it feels more like Master Chief is the main character instead of getting a little lost in the ensemble.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. I now that we have our Paramount Plus, because of course we need that to watch our Star Trek, I must admit I've passed by that one a few times and thought, am I ready to start this yet? Am I ready to start this yet?
Same here.
You know, like it's been on the list, but it's like, am I ready? Am I ready to jump into this? Would you say it's worth the time?
If you are not going to view it as blasphemy against the canon of the video games and other material, like there, again, if people who are like, I'm kind of more casual as a Halo fan, so it didn't really bother me as much in season one, but even I could still see some issues that I think are improved. Again, I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure your background on this. I think it's worth it. It's got some good pew pew pews. Second season is definitely a lot better when it comes to making the story beats feel like they make more sense.
Right.
They still are trying to, you know, unravel some of the wackiness that they went with in season one. So it's got a little bit of that, like, I mean, look at the first or the full three seasons of Picard, right? Where like season three is like, holy smokes, like really good. Season two and one, a little bit of meh in points. And so season three of Picard kind of has to unravel some of the nuttiness. They they're kind of unraveling some of the nuttiness from season one in season two here for Halo. Hmm.
Well, speaking of nuttiness, I am really looking forward to your next item.
Yeah, in contrast to the heavily caveated Halo, I think if you like the X-Men at all, and especially if you enjoyed the 92 animated series, you will, I think, love 97. There's definitely been people who say, like, well, the art's not the same. I'm like, yeah, it's not exactly, but they did try to keep the character designs as close as they could with different technology. And they do have many of the same voice actors. They don't always sound exactly the same, but it's also like 30 years later. So,
Come on. Come a little slack.
Yeah.
Maybe. So is it actually like a brand new show just called 97?
No, it picks up right where the other one left off. There's some recap videos online that people have of, like, in 2 minutes or in 15 minutes or 30 minutes, however much you want, of like, give me a recap of the first 5 seasons of X-Men. This just continues on in like a comfortable shoe or like warm mac and cheese.
No, but I mean, it's called 97, but it's a continuation of the show from the 90s.
Right, because the show started in 92 and then went for 5 seasons. Right. So if you do the math there, it's like, this is what would have happened if they'd continued on. And they just rolled.
Oh, into 97.
It. Yeah.
I gotcha.
And it continues in ways that make a lot of sense. And it is still set in the 90s. And it handles things like... I'm not the only one who's thought this. I'm probably seeing 2 or 3 YouTube videos on like how this is the best version of Cyclops, who hasn't been handled, 100% well. And even his literal power from the comics for Cyclops isn't heat vision or laser vision or something more akin to like Superman. It is, what is it? Concussive force blasts. So it has kinetic energy to it. And they make use of that quite well in the first episode. It's pretty sweet.
Right.
Yeah.
So did you watch the entirety of the original series, Jaime? I watched it. I was casual because it was on Saturday mornings. And by the time it was on in the early 90s, I was getting into my later teens and couldn't keep up with it. I used to try and sort of catch up, but I must admit, I didn't get a chance to watch everything. I enjoyed what I watched. It was very... That's the other thing, is it in an era where comics were getting like smarter, it was staying kind of early 90s, which a lot of comic fans who lived through that era don't love, because there was a lot of like a lot more sizzle than steak, shall we say. I'm really curious as to whether you were like coming into this as like, I've been living on this, cliffhanger for the last 20 plus years.
In that era, it was a little harder to know, right? You didn't have the easy access to like, here's the full episode list. I would have told you before I watched these recaps, I was like, oh yeah, I definitely did. And then at some point in the recap, I said, when did that happen? And clearly that's when I started drifting away. Again, in an era where you didn't have, well, let me just turn on Disney Plus and catch up on this series. It was I sure hope somebody has some VHS tapes, or go to Best Buy and hope that they have them in stock.
Well, and I remember over the past, number of years, and I'm going to say a good 20 plus, initially, yeah, you're right. They put out some of the stuff, I don't think the whole series, but I think they put out a good chunk of the series on VHS. And then it was probably in the last 15 years, they put out, DVD box sets where you could finally watch like the whole seasons and watch them like that. And I had friends who were like, I cannot wait to devour these things. For me, it wasn't there. And then, as you say, and then now in the streaming era, you can sit down and you can power through, is it 5 seasons worth of those episodes? But I must admit, I've never thought, hey, I'm going to sit down and watch 5 seasons of the X-Men cartoon. It's never occurred to me. When I saw some of these recap videos pop up, I was like, oh, I kind of wouldn't mind watching those just so that I can catch up. I mean, I know the source material really well. So, nothing's going to sort of take me off guard, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing is this show, they use the great intro theme song, and they've remade the intro for the animated series. But they do something different here, in that I realized that I think every one of the intros so far has been mildly different. So it's not exactly the same pecan intro. I'll be like, wait, that character I don't think was there in the very first episode's intro. And And I'm trying to think of the scene. So I'm sure somebody out there will do a super cut at the end of the season and like start them all, put them on a big grid and show you like how they're very similar, but not exactly the same.
Yeah. I saw a clip the other day where they were saying that they finally replaced the weak link characters from the original intro, where the one of the characters was just like made up. It was supposed to be a placeholder and they just kept it in there as the character was like wearing a green outfit with a pink head in the intro of the original series. And people were always like, who is that supposed to be? And it turns out it was an animation studio mistake. And they were just like, eh, it's fine. And so they left it in there.
Notice. Yeah.
And so now when they've relaunched it, they've put in, I think it's Lady Deathstrike and the White Queen. They've added into the intro and people were like, thank God, because that's bothered people for 30 years.
Right.
Yeah, it's. Right. I'm glad that they're doing this, and I feel like I want to be part of it. I want to sort of jump back in and get back into it. But I'm also like, it feels like a little impenetrable, and I'm wondering how many other fans have that feeling of like, well, I don't know if I want to just watch a recap video or if that's enough, or where you know, like if you could just jump in.
Yeah, and if people aren't comfortable just jumping in, the 92 series is there. You could just binge and catch up. There's only going to be 10 episodes, I believe, this season. So it's not as if you're like, you know, by the end of this season going to be incomprehensibly behind. There's not like 50 new episodes coming out or 25 new episodes. And they're half hour episodes. So they're pretty breezy.
Yeah. I'm going to start mine by asking a question, which is, have you both watched Three Body Problem?
Yes. Only part of it. We're like a couple episodes in. We've not finished okay. yet.
Then I will try and do this at a spoiler-free level, which means we can't talk about episode 5, which is when every time I talk to people, they're like, I'm watching it now. I'm like, let me know once you've finished watching episode 5. Let's discuss.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Because that was the one going in that the showrunners were like, that's kind of where, like, that's our, like, signature one for the season. And we're like, okay. And then I watched it and I was like, whoa, okay, yes, I see why. Okay. So Three Body Problem, of course, based on this famous Chinese sci-fi novel. We've talked about it on past episodes. They dropped all the episodes a few weeks back on Netflix. It's by Benioff and Weiss, the two guys who were the showrunners for Game of Thrones. This is kind of the thing that they have been working on next. So they dropped 8 episodes on Netflix all at once, which I hate because the conversation came and went on the show so fast, you know, and now it's just like every other Netflix conversation, which is the ones I hate the most, where it's like, oh, did you watch all exactly what you and I just did, Jaime? Oh, did you watch this? I've watched some of it. I don't have unlimited time. I'm a grown up, you know. And so everybody kind of comes to it in their own time and leaves it in their own time. And the conversation is just kind of dead. That being said, I thought it was an interesting show. I think it was a little too fast paced for my taste. Like they really ground through it fast. Like there's huge leaps in character development that don't seem to match up with huge developments in time. So that kind of stuck in my mind a little bit. But the concepts and the way that I read a little bit about sort of the differences. I have the book. Tim gave me the book for my birthday and I haven't had a chance to read it yet. And I'll tell you why in a minute. But so I don't know much about it. So I looked up a little bit, like, you know, some people were talking about some of the differences and I read through some of the differences. I'm like, oh, no, it sounds like the show kind of made differences for the better, not differences for the worst.
Yeah.
The concepts are really interesting. The science is really interesting. The sort of, you know, it's one of those great, what would you do if you were in that moment kind of, you know, they put a lot of the characters are put in very tough positions. And then what would you do? What would you do? So you find yourself often thinking, well, what would I do? What would I do? And I enjoyed it, but I can't say that it was like a 10 out of 10 home run. It was probably a good, you know, 3.5, 4 out of 5. It's not a slam dunk. I don't think it's an absolute have to watch, but I do think there's enough there that I definitely am curious for next season. Tim, what did you think?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting story, but you know, it's funny because, you know, having read the book or listened to the audiobook, there were things in this story that I don't remember from the thing. Like I didn't grok what the three body problem was until they explained it in the TV show. Mm. Right. But the whole gameplay, the VR gameplay part was kind of, interesting. They were obviously able to play with it a bit more in this version. The other thing that's odd is that they've moved the story from China to London,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And anglicized the characters, right? So,
well, diversified, let's say, because there is obviously people of different cultures and stuff. They kind of turned it into a Benetton ad, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so it is kind of interesting. I don't know that they necessarily finished the story where the book ends, but I do remember the book sort of being in three major parts, right?
Yeah,
and because there's the old Cultural Revolution part, and then there's with the space stuff, and then there's the SETI situation, and then the VR game thing, right? And
yeah,
I've read a few books where they try to talk about VR, you know, immersive, you know, all encompassing immersive worlds, which is a really interesting idea. I don't know if anybody's really pulled it off, right? But I guess they have. I guess that, you know, like that the game I played last year with the horses and the cowboys and stuff. Red Dead. That kind of sort of has that same effect, right? Mm-hmm. Like you just get into that world and your ethos and your ethics are based on the world you're in, like, kind of thing, right? So that was interesting. I mean, I did enjoy it, but I guess you're right. It's probably a 3.5, not quite a 4. You know, for me, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And again, like you said, I don't like the fact that they just dropped it all at once, right? Because that basically meant that, you know, within 3 or 4 days, I'd end up watching the whole thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and it didn't leave a lot of room for discourse. Like, I really do think the way that they did it, too, particularly in the fact that it is very accelerated, as far as sort of the characters, the timelines, the revelations and stuff, would have worked really well. Like, I almost would recommend, if you haven't seen it, dear listeners, maybe even do yourself a favor, and it would be hard to do, but like, space it out. Even if you watch it every other day or once a week, you would almost serve yourself better, because it really feels super tight. Now, again, that's part of the, I wonder if that's part of the criticism of Benioff and Weiss, where they talked about how, you know, they really kind of stretched out the Game of Thrones series and really took their time with it, and then they had to sort of hurry up and finish the end. Here it almost feels the opposite. It feels like they're like sprinting. Like, it starts out, Jaime, obviously you've gotten through the first few episodes. It's very much a mystery. It's sort of, you know, well, what is this? Who are these people? It's very shadowy. And then it kind of breaks open a little bit. And once it breaks open, it just starts running, like running. And everything kind of, the pace of the show, the type of show it is, like, all of it kind of shifted in my mind. I don't think it's a bad show, but I think it's interesting, some of the choices that they've made, and, you know, I guess it's in the eye of the beholder, whether that works for you or not. What have you thought so far of what you've seen, Jaime?
It does seem pretty fast. I'm kind of interested to see if it goes faster.
It does. Believe me, it does.
Is it going to be, because it is, what, like 8 to 10 episodes? So
I think it's 8. Yeah.
You know, hold my beer for 8 episodes seems pretty intense, if that's what ends up happening.
Yeah. No, it definitely is. It's a bit of a breakneck pace, and you know, who the characters are at the beginning change, you know, a lot in a very short amount of time, which is unusual for a show like that. But maybe, you know, like, I know from doing some reading after finishing the first season of the show that they pulled some stuff from the second book in the series up to the first, just to sort of move things forward, because some of the stuff wouldn't have made sense if they tried to sort of keep it separate. So I wonder if they have not actually said explicitly that they're making season 2. I can't imagine with the kind of contract they signed.
It leaves with a huge contract, with a huge cliffhanger kind of thing.
It leaves with a huge cliffhanger. And beyond that, it's also Benioff and Weiss signed an exclusive Netflix contract to work on shows for them. And this was a big get for them to get this sci-fi property that people were like, oh, you couldn't make this. It's really confusing. Yeah. And it's very science-y. I think it would be very unusual if they didn't do a second season. I don't know if they can wrap it in 2 or they're going to do 3 seasons if they can, but I don't think this is going to be like an 8 season series. I'd be surprised if it lasted more than 2 or 3.
Yeah, there's a Chinese version of it too, which people have said is better than this so far, but we'll see.
Yeah. One of the reasons I haven't read Through Body Problem is that I took the time to read Wool, which is the first book of the Silo series. I got the boxed set of the three books, and so I sat down and read Wool, which is the Silo series that's on Apple TV Plus with Rebecca Ferguson, covers the first half of the first book. So the first half of this book is the first season of Silo, and the second half I'm guessing will be the second part of that. I was curious though, because I don't know if either of you have read this or know much about it, but the second book in the series is called Shift, and Shift does not feature the same characters as far as I can tell, because I just started it. It doesn't feature the same characters as the first book, Wool. So I don't know if it's going to tie it all together in the second and third books or how it's going to come together, but it's what you're watching on TV now. Like the story of Juliet and all that kind of seems like it's only one more season. And then I don't know if they're going to do more or if that was the whole point. Like they got somebody as high profile as Rebecca Ferguson because they're only doing her for like two seasons and then they can move on to other characters and hire new people. But interesting. So if you're thinking of reading the back material, if you're thinking of reading it, Hugh Howey is a great writer. I really thought he was, considering this was like his first real, I mean, he'd written, you know, he was basically selling like parts of books and little novellas and short stories and stuff like that on Amazon for like 99 cents. And he wrote this and started writing it and putting it up for 99 cents for chunks. And people were like, we love this, finish the book. And so he did it and it became a huge hit. And now he's, you know, he's obviously very influential. But he's a really talented writer. He really paints a picture. He's got a good ear for dialogue. It's worth reading. If you have a chance, whether that's in an audiobook form or obviously sitting down and reading the actual book. But yeah, I would highly recommend it. I'm looking forward to reading Shift, and I'm looking forward to reading Dust, which is the third one after that. And yeah, it's he's really created an interesting world to explore. And Jaime, I will say for your edification, it is set in the United States and is really interesting. Some of the metaphor for this whole thing is really interesting. When you put the lens of it being American is interesting too. So yeah, recommend.
Cool.
And the last one is just something to look ahead to. They dropped the trailer yesterday for Dead Boy Detectives. This is another Netflix series. It is a spinoff from The Sandman. This was a set of characters created in The Sandman's comic book series. A pair of ghosts who are basically working on behalf of other ghosts to help sort of get them over to the other side. They solve these mysteries about how people died and things so that they can help them pass through. It's a fun comic character story, you know, enjoyable when in the original form. And from what I saw of the trailer that they dropped this week, they've really kind of got a similar energy. There does look like there'll be some little tiny bit of crossover into the Sandman universe, which of course exists on Netflix. So yeah, I thought the trailer was cool. It's coming out on April 25th. I'm sure as all Netflix things go, they're going to drop them all at once. But yeah, it looks, I think if you're a fan of something like The Sandman or even Wednesday or, you know, sort of that YA version of the sort of macabre, it, yeah, it should definitely click for you. It looks like a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. And then for me, I spent two days on planes, flying to Beijing and back. So I got to catch up on a lot of movies. I've watched a ton of sci-fi stuff. I've watched that Adam Sandler Spaceman thing, which was unremarkable. If you miss it, don't worry about it. Oh, and the other thing too is I noticed that Prime is starting throwing commercials into the regular TV stuff now.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Which is kind of, you know, it's like one commercial and it's gone, but it's not terribly painful, but it's kind of annoying. So one of the movies I saw this on the way to Beijing was Dream Scenario, which is the Nicolas Cage movie where people start having dreams. He's an English teacher, and people start having dreams with him in their dreams, but he's not doing anything. He's just sort of walking by as they're going through some horrible situation. he's like, he's just there and ignoring him. And then it turns out that more and more people are seeing him in their dreams, like people who don't know him and people at dinner parties and strangers. And it kind of escalates into sort of kind of like a Me Too kind of thing, right? Because he ends up, you know, doing bad things in the dreams, and then people start to associate that with him. So it's kind of an interesting sort of sci-fi fantasy thing where this like just boring guy, you know, just a regular college professor ends up being in this dream scenario kind of thing, right? So I guess that's why they call it a dream scenario. But yeah, sort of an interesting movie. The other thing I wanted to talk about real quick was, this is sort of following up on the Vision Pro stuff, is that I have really enjoyed watching some content in 3D on Vision Pro, like all of the Marvel stuff, like since I watched Endgame and I watched the one before Endgame. Like Thor Ragnarok is in there, Quantumania is in there. The Star Wars stuff from, starting with Rogue One, which of course is the best of that series, right? All the way up to Jonathan's favorite movie, you know, The Last Skywalker. And The Rise of the Last Skywalker, Strikes Again, Son of whatever. Yeah, that one. But I've also taken advantage of, before Dune came out, Apple put, in both Canada and the US, they put the Dune Part 1, the Denis Villeneuve story or film in 3D, which was kind of interesting to watch. I've been watching Bad Batch on the Vision Pro, like I'm riding my exercise bike while I take in Bad Batch, which is kind of an interesting way to watch that. Because, you know, it's like watching it on a big giant screen TV, right, sort of thing, right? I have figured out how to watch Netflix on the Vision Pro, but it's not 4K, which brings me to, I also bought Gravity on my US account, and which I like that movie, but, and I want it, it's in 3D, which is kind of nice. It's like, you don't have to put on you are putting on a goofy set of glasses, but you're not putting on the ones that you get in the theaters that keep falling off your face, right? And it's not the polarized thing. So from a clarity point of view, it's really nice to watch 3D content on there. But the Gravity movie is not 4K, so it's so obviously, you know, soft and not out of focus and stuff like that, right? Like I said, I watched a bunch of movies. Most of the movies I watched were the ones that were nominated for the Oscars, the last couple of weeks. But I did finally, like, I kept avoiding Aquaman, and then I had, you know, a couple of 3 hours left on the flight on the way back. And so I started watching Aquaman. I made it maybe 2/3 of the way through, and I'm not going to finish that movie. It is so bad. I don't know if you guys have seen it or whatever, but...
No, just, that's been sitting on my, like, ugh, am I that hard up for anything to watch list?
Yeah, it's ugh, really. Like, I mean, like, you know, Aquaman has, like, if you look at it from the Big Bang Theory point of view, Aquaman was the one character nobody wanted to be, so it always ended up being Kutrapali's character to dress up as, right? And I liked Aquaman when I was a kid. I used to watch it on Saturday morning, you know, with the dolphins and the signaling, you know, the blonde Aquaman kind of guy, right? But Jason Momoa doesn't take his character doesn't take the fact that he's king of Atlantis seriously enough. For me, right. And you know, like he resurrects his brother, he helps his brother escape, and his brother's like, why are you king? I should be king. And I'm like, yeah, you should be king. You know, can I stop the movie now? You know, thanks for coming out. Right. Kind of thing. Yeah. So I'm not going to finish it. I think I've probably given it too much airtime as it is. It's just not worth watching or talking about.
I will say, for the record, I've read some great, truly great Aquaman stories over my 40 years of reading comic books. But in both animation and live action, I've never seen that character done perfectly.
Well, yeah. I thought for a second you were going to say that you heard some great things about this particular movie, but then I would be hard-pressed to find
hear that. Very much not bad.
And I did finally get around to watching Chernobyl, which is an interesting take. It's strange because all of the Russian actors speak with English accents, which is, I guess, is kind of like normal or whatever, but... and it's kind of like a what happened kind of story. I don't know how much of it is based in actual fact or whatever, but, and you know, Gorbachev did say that Chernobyl was one of the reasons why the Russian or the USSR collapsed, just because of the cost and the bad sentiment. But it's an interesting story about, you know, kind of everything you kind of remember about the Soviet Union and their sort of, you know, conceit about how things work. And like for the first part of the series, they can't believe there's no way that this, their technology could fail. Like it just couldn't fail. So like even when, you know, the fire is burning and people are dying, you know, the guy in charge is saying, there's like, okay, tell me how it could possibly fail. Even though it is failing behind his back, kind of thing, right?
Yep.
So, and then it's sort of a story behind how, you know, the fallout from all the people investigating and stuff like that, and they all obviously get sick and die because it was super radioactive. I think it still is. In fact, I think isn't one of the movies, Suicide Squad or something? They go back to Chernobyl in the last go round. There was a bit of a thing there, right? So yeah, interesting, very good whodunit kind of, like, you know, mystery solved kind of retelling of the accident kind of thing, right? So
yeah, and Craig Mazin, the guy who was the showrunner for that, the thing he went on to do after that was Last of Us.
Oh really? Okay. Yeah. It is pretty dystopian, but it's a good I think it's like 8 episodes maybe, so yeah, it's worth watching. I don't want to say fun time, but it's a really interesting, enlightening thing. And I mean, even though it's not really sci-fi, the one movie I did watch that's super enlightening and really kind of creepy, I did watch Zone of Interest. Yes, on the plane. That's a very strange movie, but I'll leave it at that. I don't want to spoil anything on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that's it for another week. So, or another, what, a month? How's it been? 3 months?
Yes. A couple months.
Yeah, that's it for another quarter. Jonathan, if you want to find you on the interwebs, where would they find you?
You can find me on the interwebs on X as @JPKNews, on Instagram as @JPKNews, or on YouTube at youtube.com/@JPK.
All right, and Jaime, if people want to get in touch with you.
I'm on Twitter as @DevWithAHair.
All right. And my name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra, on all of the things, the Twitter, the Mastodon, the Instagram, yeah, just like that. So that's where you find me. And so until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. This is Jean-Luc Picard.
Shut up, Wesley.
Sorry, say again. Just the tag. Gotcha. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.